Greetings, Gothamites and citizens of Bloodhaven and the outlying territories, and welcome to episode 84 of I Am the Knight. We'll be covering episode 1 of the Nightwing Adventures. No, we won't. We're covering season 3, episode 5 of Batman the Animated Series, but it is also excited. The first full appearance of Nightwing, and he is awesome. By Hilary J. Bader, who's really impressing the living bejesus out of me, and directed by Butch Lukic. But enough from me. Here's our very own Nightwing. Adam, how are you?
Very well indeed. Nice to have finally seen him on screen, looking classic with the mullet and the blues, just like he's depicted in the 90s. I remember the first appearances of him as illustrated by the late, great George Perez with the big collar. But like both are distinctive, definitive Nightwing looks. But this portrayal's honestly as perfect as the rest of the Batman the Animated Series for me in my land. They got the tone of him down and the whole outside, but still very much a member of the Bat family ethos down here. So yeah, definitive as always.
Do you know what got me about this episode? Because let's start from the beginning. It's amazing how hindsight will change your opinion, because if I had seen this on first release, I probably wouldn't have liked it. Because this is 1998. This is near the end of the first ongoing Catwoman series, where she takes a step from villain to anti-hero. And already my mindset would be is Selina's a good guy. And the fact that by the end of this episode she isn't would have really annoyed me back then. But benefit of hindsight, especially after seeing these in order and seeing Scarface's retribution and turning to away from the dark ways last week, it would have been too much to see another villain turn good so quickly. So seeing it with today's vision and looking at the writing is actually better. I'm glad I haven't seen this episode before now.
Yeah, I can agree with that. There's definitely some merit to them, because with the Scarface episode being just the one before where we see him sort of like redeem himself and lose that criminal side of himself, the possibility of it doubling up on like the redemption stories may have gotten a little tired. So the fact that they almost did but didn't was a great way to subvert our expectations. But I wasn't too invested in that in my mind. I knew that there was something else going on. There's something about this version of Catwoman that we really shouldn't trust. She's very nefarious in that way, which is something that I like. So I'm glad that that's something that ever really crossed my mind while I was watching the episode. It was just an interesting dynamic, because she's always been sort of involved with the Bat family, but always there on the fringes. So that kind of element to her using that to sort of like get Nightwing's attention makes a natural fit for me. So it made for a great dynamic here in the episode that had very little Batman, but still had a very big Batman influence.
Absolutely. That's spot on. She's also the ultimate Shades of Grey character, if we're thinking about it as well, because from her first appearance way back in 1940, she was pure villain. But she was the first villain, way before Talia or Poison Ivy or any of the others, to get into Batman's heart. And why her ultimate redemption, which took 40 plus years, felt so much more earned. And in this episode, we do see that I think maybe she wants to, but the shiny objects still lure her in, don't they?
They really do. That was always her plan, but I think a part of her did see the benefit in trying to bring down the smuggling ring. But in the very Machiavellian utilitarian sense, she did the good thing nobly, bringing down these criminals, but she still benefited out of it, which is a very true form for this era of Catwoman, which is why I can forgive it.
Spot on. I was going to say that. This was like a foreshadowing of the Catwoman of today, where she's still a crook. There's no denying it. She is, as you brilliantly named her, DC's greatest thief. And I love that moniker. I hope that sticks. That to me is like world's greatest detective. She still commits the crimes, but for the right reasons, and they benefit the people who need it to. So this is like a brilliant 30 years ago foreshadowing of what Catwoman would eventually become. And I love that. And I'm starting to see Hilary Bader as a writer who is clearly a fantastically talented writer, because she blew my mind and left me thrown and completely baffled me several times in this one episode alone. But someone who understands Catwoman, Dick Grayson, Nightwing, Batman, Batgirl, and loves them. That's the real feeling I got from this one episode.
Yeah. This is a writer that knows these characters very well, knows where they are in this moment, sort of like as people, because this is still the Dick Grayson who's like fresh on the scene, being a unique individual as Nightwing. So there might have been like some interim time where he was away in a different part of the city leading the Titans or whatever, or this is just him going solo, getting a new look before he moves out to Bloodhaven. So this is him still very fresh and very much needing independence, and being able to make a story around that with another character that's still nefarious but still like playing on that need. Yeah, that's an excellent like mastery and understanding of these characters. So well done indeed.
It's great, because when the episode opens, it opens on Nightwing, and already you know what I'm like. I was like, yes! Oh my god!
Oh no, I did the exact same thing. Honestly, I did the exact same thing.
So good.
Because we had that little tease of Dick coming back, looking a little older, looking a little wiser, but that was a couple of episodes ago, so we've been waiting for him to show up, so he shows up sort of as a surprise. And it was a very welcome surprise at that.
Lovely surprise. So he's there, he's looking over the Gotham docks. I mean, how much crime goes down in that place, for reals, man. And Batman and Batgirl turn up, and it's beautiful, because Batman doesn't say a word.
Doesn't need to.
But you can feel something, and it's only made clear at the very end. Is he judging Dick? Is he testing Dick? And yes and no.
Mm.
And the way they, God, it's so well done. They're playing their parts. And when Catwoman turns up and captures that last bad guy after, and this moment just made me so happy.
Oh, yeah.
The last bad guy runs through the docks, goes between two cargo containers, and Batman's just standing there. And the animators, the look of fear.
Mm.
And Batman just sits there and just, like, move along. And the guy carries on running. And I think, oh, yeah, Babs will get him. But then the title of the goddamn episode, You Scratch My Back, had to be Selina. And as soon as you see that silhouette, now I want to ask you,
this will be good,
what do you think of this redesign for Selina? Because in the old episodes, she was clearly modeled on Michelle Pfeiffer, long blonde hair, whatever else, but in the classic 40s 50s Catwoman outfit. Now this is clearly the pale makeup when she's Catwoman, and the black costume is much more Batman Returns. But when she takes off her mask, she's the classic short cropped hair, dark hair, no longer dyed blonde Selina that we all know and love. And I wasn't ready for it.
No, it was a very welcome redesign, but the actual Catwoman look is still very much more sincere to Catwoman of now, but still very Michelle Pfeiffer, especially after she says bye to Nightwing, then handsprings away the same way we see her handspring in to say hi to Batman and Penguin in Batman Returns. That was exactly another note that I also took down. So this new sort of series, as it were, where they've had a lot of chance to like redesign characters and introduce some new ones in the form of Nightwing and Tim Drake, they've had a lot of chances to like say, all right, this is a fresh start, we're going to redesign a few things, but it's still going to definitely be the same kinds of characters that you know. So yeah, they made her less Michelle Pfeiffer, but somehow more Michelle Pfeiffer, but ultimately more Catwoman somehow.
That's it. It's a magical blend, isn't it? This is vintage Selina Kyle now. This is the real Selina Kyle we know and love. But brilliantly, like you said, this is a refresh. This is a fresh start. People can start watching this series from this episode, from this season. But what we're getting still is classic Adrienne Barbeau, sarcastic, vintage, catty Catwoman. But also classic Kevin Conroy and Lauren Lester. This is something that blew my mind. It's still the same voice. You know this is the Dick Grayson we've been watching for the last 6 years. However, older, gruffer, wiser, smarter. So, yes, it's a fresh reset, especially with a brand new Batgirl, but you've still got that feeling of familiarity, which really draws you in.
It's a very tough thing to be able to perform. It's something that only like masters of the voice acting craft can really do, which is why it kind of bugs me when I see like animated movies coming out with an all-star celebrity cast, but I'm like, they're screen actors. There are so many good voice actors out there that can do the same kind of job. I'm not going to name any names, but I have a particular gripe of what's and coming to cinemas very soon. So when I see talent like this being able to pull that kind of performance out very effortlessly, and some viewers, some younger viewers especially, may not necessarily notice, but to those who know what they're looking for, we're so rewarded for feeling like, yes, this is the same version of the character that's grown up on screen as we've watched. And they've gone through the maturity that would make sense for them to actually become Nightwing or another figure of justice. So, yeah, we get a really strong performance here. But I also want to talk just a brief second about actually the performance of Catwoman, because there was a lot of moments.
Go for it.
Particularly when she was out of costume, and she was at that moment when she was talking to Batman, which gave me a lot of Eartha Kitt energy. There was a sort of like minor growl, sort of like, sort of thing about it.
Yes.
And I was like, yeah, okay, there's something done properly here. It definitely feels as though there's something deliberately catty there, and I liked hearing that.
Spot on. I was going to mention it later, but you got it in one. I can't top that. That was a mic drop moment. Exactly. She's like the perfect synthesis of every version of Catwoman 1940 to 1998 when this came out. So absolutely. And you're so right. Every voice actor in this show, from day one, we've said it, is phenomenal. But I want to go back to the writer. I want to go back to Hilary J. Bader, because not only plot-wise and red herrings and clues and whatever else and throwing me off the picture, because, again, very little TV or movie can throw me off the scent quite like this show does. But I want to also tip my hat to her use of dialogue, the way she characterizes these characters. For example, from the beginning, this is my gig. I would have called if I needed help. Batman saying to Dick in between when he's let that criminal go, he's all yours. Babs to Bruce, you're the one who raised him. It's little moments of dialogue like that. When they do fight side by side at the end of the episode and Batman says, not bad, when Dick's fighting, and Dick turns around and says, yeah, for a guy your age. It's magic. What did you make of the dialogue as well in this episode?
It effortlessly felt like they had known each other for decades. Effortlessly felt like they had been through uncountable adventures. Some, of course, that we've seen on screen, but most of them we probably haven't. We probably would have read about them in the Batman the Adventures comics, or would have been referencing just like context clues for other stuff. But there's so much love there. There's so much familiarity there. There's so much understanding there. It just feels very lived in and very sincere and very real. And we love that. It shows the length of growth that these characters have gone through, especially considering how long this overall series has lasted, that we can see this growth naturally, and we're just rewarded with such well-handled, well-rounded characters every single time.
Spot on. And I'm glad you mentioned that growth, because I definitely sensed in this episode with the very flirtatious Selina and the frissons of chemistry and electricity between Babs and Dick, which lead, as we know it, to, for me, the greatest romance in all of comics ever. I love these two. I've shipped these two from day one. I want Babs and Dick to get married. And every issue I read of the current Nightwing run, the closer it seems to be getting. They are a strong, firm couple now. To get the beginnings of that relationship already, and it's not spoken. It's nuances in the way they talk to each other. But there's one particular shot where Dick's with Selina in the apartment and Batman's in there, but Babs is across the way and Dick sees her. You could cut that tension with a knife. It's beautiful.
See, now I got that same feeling, but from a very different scene. The scene where she's in his apartment, presumably, and he's preparing for his night out. Yeah. on the town. And he goes off to change it in the Nightwing costume, but she's looking at a picture of the two of them. The two of them, no neutral background, no Bruce, no Alfred.
Left out on purpose.
Oh, yeah, he super duper did that. Because he's just remembering, he's just like, yes, I know that I'm my own man, but we still have, and I have this particular job to do. But we had some good times. You know what's up. So, yeah, it's moments like that that just really show how well this writer understands these characters, because they do have that relationship they always had. So them, like, living it and putting it, like, in literal focus in the context of a picture, we're rewarded by that, and it's really, really nice.
It's those layers, isn't it, that just elevates this. This is art. This series from day one is pure art. And other little, some might think silly throwaway, but I think a wonderful adds bits of colour. Like Catwoman's cattiness and, like you said, the Eartha Kitt pop, brilliant, well spotted. But even the little thing where Dick and Selina are in the dockyards about to apprehend the villains, and a rat wanders up to Selina and she hisses at it. Do you know what? I love that. It's great.
It's like, that is a little callback to the Eartha Kitt days and them trying to be true to form to the things that inspired this, because, yeah, that's probably correct. Like, TV-wise, the last depiction of Batman on TV must have been Adam West. There must have been, maybe been like a weird few serials here and there. But like, no, the films, no, obviously, right. we've got like Keaton and Val Kilmer and maybe George Clooney at this point. But before that on TV, maybe?
No. Just Adam West, you're spot on.
Right. So, yeah, they have some intertextual need to call back to some of the things that inspired them. Clearly, obviously, the tone's very different and the stories they're kind of telling are wildly different. But you still have to pay that kind of respect, the same way in the hugely Marmite Batman and Robin, there's the holy rusted metal Batman moment.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah,
exactly.
Well, also, it needs to be there for the younger audience, the kids, because while this is cerebral, deep, textured, layered stuff for us adults, this is still an animated series, and you need that for the children, for the younger parts of the audience. But the action in this particular episode does that as well. And I've got to talk about how Nightwing is so different to Robin, even though it's Lauren Lester, it's the same character. In this one episode alone, I've seen a Nightwing who exudes the same charisma and attitude as Batman does, because the villains are afraid of him, but he's still the consummate showman, the acrobat, yes, the circus brat. The way he moves and fights is totally different to Batman. You see it the way he fights the goons and the main villain, Ricky the Hook, Enrique El Gancho, and the way Batman does later. He's much more of a martial artist, a capoeira, which you'll get from the graphic novel, I'll lend you, and much more fluid kind of fighter, as Batman is power moves. Like, he is a brawler. But we also see when Batman faces him, the use of tactical fighting, because this guy, again, is like Rhino. This guy is bigger, stronger, meaner, and he gives Batman a few hits. So Batman uses the weight of him, the judo throws, the wrestling moves, the you use whatever's at hand, and the way he uses the fire extinguisher.
Yeah.
To get that much classic Batman, Nightwing, Catwoman, Batgirl, again, into 20 minutes,
yeah, because we know Batman's pedigree and Batman's training. That's been evident and shown off in the early episodes very well, in a way that's not sort of like beating us over the head with it. So we're rewarded by knowing that, but we also get the combination of it done realistically, done villain to villain. That's why we're rewarded for being like serialized viewers, because little kids watching this every other Saturday morning or whenever it's on, they'll just be like, oh, Batman's so cool. He can beat up, he can take down any bad guy. And that's all great. That's the show doing right by its other target audience. But for us, we're rewarded by seeing like Batman being tactical, Batman being calculating, Batman knowing that he can't fight this one dude on this axis, so he has to do something another way. But that's just Batman to us. He's that skilled regardless. We get that rewarded by Nightwing. I mean, the episode opens with Nightwing, but it also opens with Nightwing handling that gunrunner group by himself perfectly. So any doubt that the viewers who didn't necessarily know about Nightwing and his deal might have had, be like, oh, he was always running alongside Batman. Can he take them all on his own? Oh, this is Nightwing. He can handle this. Great, cool. I love this character. So it appeals to that third sort of target group this show handles perfectly. Yes. It brings in people who want to know more for Batman, who are hungry for DC Comics and wants to see these characters in action, but outside of the comics and in different media. Seeing Nightwing do that, handle those bad guys with a great level of skill, but still have the same figure of fear to be that vision of justice that Batman can be, whilst still being flashy and flippy and the acrobat that Batman necessarily isn't, thus making him his own character, every viewer is covered just by what we see, but that's just the show acting on its own merits. It doesn't need to do anything flashy to do that. That's just the show doing it's what we would, the show standard, but better than most other superhero media.
Exactly that. It's doing what the show does best. I love what you said there, though, because it's something I hadn't really thought about, that yeah, it's great for kids and for adults, but it is. And it's true. I mean, looking back at most of the people I know who weren't into comics, this is one of the shows that brought them in. It's this level of show because it got so much right. For example, let's talk about how these three characters, Batman, Nightwing, and Batgirl, and the writing by Hilary J. Bader, you're convinced at the start that Dick no longer wants to be part of this family. He's going out on his own. And that twist at the end where you think, well, Dick's actually working with Selina now, not with Bruce and Babs, and he's accepting her and believing that she's turned a page. And then right at the end, it's the complete opposite. They've drawn Selina in because they knew she was after the jewel from the start. She wasn't turning over a new leaf. And that subterfuge, that brilliant spanner in the works moment, where I just thought, Hilary J. Bader, you magnificent legend. Awesome. I did not see that coming.
See, now, I was willing to be surprised, but I had every faith because of a line that you emphasized a little bit. If I needed help, I would have called. That sort of said to me, okay, sure, he's on his own, he's independent, but he knows that he's still on this team and he knows that they will always have his back.
He would have called.
So if things were looking shifty here, he'd be like, all right, I'm going to roll with Selina for a while, lay off me, but if things go weird, I'm going to need your backup for this. Sure, maybe over the course of the episode, we see Batman sort of like, being too much of a presence and sort of intimidating Selina down, or was that just Batman's plan to try and like get Selina to confide in Nightwing more so that she slips up? Yeah. So we're rewarded for thinking that kind of double-layered sort of what was the intention here, but it still gives that satisfying payoff whether you were aware of it or not. And for those people who aren't as sad as us that didn't want to look into it that deeply, we're rewarded with just the surprising plot twist. So we get all of that in 20 minutes, quote unquote, kids TV, which is like the level of like story craft that I don't see in most primetime procedurals.
And you're a writer.
I know, I am. I try to write a little bit of fiction every couple of days. And it's that kind of connecting something that's mentioned very lightly offhand in the beginning into something that becomes crucial at the end that is something that really rewards your readers and your viewers for paying attention, but then it also provides a nice subtle surprise for those that may have skipped it and are willing to be surprised later. So yeah, masterfully done, really was.
Couldn't agree more. Now obviously this episode is mainly the mainstays, Batman, Batgirl, Nightwing, Catwoman, who we know we love and are voiced by the greatest of all time, let's be fair here. And even though Tara Strong churned off back in this time, it was new to the cast, she's already made a real impression. So let's talk about the villain, played by Sal Lopez, playing Enrique El Gancho, aka Ricky the Hook, which... The one little niggle I had, but it's minor, is the translation of stuff. Los Angelitos wouldn't be someone isn't a woman's name because it's Os. It'd be Angelitas, but that's neither here nor there. But she has got one thing spot on. The British English speakers will hear Enrique and not know that that's Henry. They'll hear the Rique bit and call him Ricky. So that's spot on, because I've experienced that in my life with several Enriques I've known over the years, that English people call them Ricky when they should call them Henry, but never mind. But I do need to say that script-wise and character-wise, fantastic writer. Really, really happy.
Most definitely.
But the actor, again, Sal Lopez, also known as Sal Lopez Jr., a career spanning over 40 years, from the late 70s all the way through the 2000s, live action and animation, appearances in movies, classics like Full Metal Jacket, Return of the Living Dead 3, the wonderful live biopic of Selena, TV shows like The Rockford Files, Chips, but then full-on geek cred. He will appear again in the Mystery of the Batwoman animated movie, which we will cover on this show eventually, and in the first Blade movie.
Oh.
But again, like last week, not just an actor who should be lauded for being an actor, but for someone from behind the scenes. This guy is a founding member of the Latino Theatre Company.
Oh, wow.
Founding member. Someone who pushed Latinx actors, writers, directors from the very beginning of his career. And a nominee for the National Council of La Raza Bravo Award, which is like a Latin American Oscars, BAFTAs, to respect the work he did for his community over that period of time. So again, we're getting someone who is clearly a wonderful actor, and the way he delivers a line, and when he's facing Batman, even though you don't see the actor, you can feel the nuances that the animators have put into the movements of the character on screen, and the way he delivers a line, the Batman's finally met his match. And you can almost feel it until Batman just says, no. To get an actor of this caliber, this standing in the theatrical community, is another coup for Andrea Romano and the talented people behind this show.
At this point, I just have to wonder how Andrea Romano kept doing it. Just to get like legends of stage and screen from across the world at this point. And like people with like immense pedigrees and just like actual historical value in terms of the people, in terms of what they've did in their career, done in their careers, like, So it just blows minds, really, just to have them in for effectively bit parts.
Yeah, yeah.
But it also shows the level of pedigree and the level of gravitas that this show sort of deserved more than it. Anyone ever really thought it would need. It couldn't have just had anybody. It needed the best, even in among its smallest parts. But then again, most people say there are no small parts, just small actors. So yeah, getting the best in the best only makes the show as strong as it was.
It's like you say, when this was running, this was like the equivalent in the UK of any actor saying, oh, what are the shows you need to appear in to say you've made it? Every British actor wants to, even if it's a bit, I mean, Ian McKellen wanted to be in Doctor Who and in Coronation Street, and he did it. Mm-hmm. This show, when it was out, especially after season one finished, became iconic, not just with fans, but with actors. So by the time season one finished, every actor in the probably said, oh, I really would love to appear on this Batman animated series. It's wonderful. And we proved it. You said it. The amount of legends and talents that appeared, from Nichelle Nichols right to Sal Lopez Jr., proves that. And again, how did Andrea Romano do it? Or did all the actors say, oh, Andrea, please, let me audition. I want to be in this show. And she goes, okay.
Yeah, sure. Well, then again, I also count on Andrea Romano being behind the totally not sinister mega corporation known as Warner Brothers. So they could get anyone if they really wanted to.
Yes, love it.
They could get anyone if they wanted to, but the fact that they made the efforts to get like measurable, like, international talents for their 20-minute kids animation just sort of shows the power of what they've had here.
Because again, it's not just big names, your Mark Hamill's and your Adrian Barbeau's, who were big stars at the time, but the underground actors who are legends in their own communities and in theatre and on Broadway and in voice acting, not just TV and cinema. So it's wonderful.
It really is.
So we get to that stage of the episode where I have to ask you, Adam Ray, Nightwing of South London, oh, North London, where you are now. Yes, you've moved to Bloodhaven, haven't you?
Yeah.
Your main takeaways, good or bad, very doubtfully bad, from You Scratch My Back.
From a nostalgia point, I really liked them seeing Nightwing and Catwoman take the shipping manifests and put it onto a 5 1/4 inch floppy disk. Yay, 90s tech.
Yes.
But in all seriousness, I think it was a lovely character moment that we should have mentioned a little earlier, but I forgot, but I'll mention here. Well, when Batman confronts Selina specifically about interacting with Nightwing, she says, well, he's not a little boy anymore. He's the Man Wonder, because she knows straight away that it's a different Robin. Street level crooks,
yes.
Some of the other supervillains may not tell the difference. Selina can tell the difference right off, and that's just how well she knows that side of people, and just like a bit more deep than some of the other villains otherwise would. That's a very rewarding thing to see. She just sort of characterizes that as just like, yes, I know what's up. These guys are different. And this guy's different. This guy used to be Robin, but now he's someone else. Not a lot of other villains would notice that. That's just how well she knows these characters.
Well done. Lovely. I didn't even think of that. Good spot. Now, for me, we've talked a lot about Hilary Bader, and rightly so, clearly proving to herself to be a fantastic writer. But I've got to give kudos this week to the director, Batman Animated Series mainstay, Book Lukic, for a few things. Choices of lighting and direction. Now, there's a part at the end, once they've defeated the Hook and Selina's trying to get away and she's starting the boat, and it's Dick that goes after her. Not Bruce or Babs, but Dick. And when he leaves that building, you can tell it's just starting. The sun's just starting to rise. This is the end of a long night of fighting crime and tracking down the villains. But the whole thing is foggy. They're at the docks. And it's that morning mist, and everything's in a dim, not quite focused light as Dick's chasing Selina on the boat. That wasn't necessary. They didn't have to do that. That was probably a bloody hard thing to achieve in animation. Mm. But it adds so much to the atmosphere of the episode. And I have to say that, again, this isn't something you'd get in animation, not just of the period, but ever. That little attention to detail, that adding of texture to what you're watching, and it was beautiful. It was absolutely gorgeous. I had to actually rewind and watch that scene again. I thought, is it just out of focus? But no, it's brilliant. Absolutely brilliant.
It is very subtle. I'll admit I didn't quite pick up on it just as much as you did, but it's definitely present, and it definitely adds to the environment of the scene, where this place where the scene's taking place. So it's a great level of realism that you get from a seaside town like Gotham, from a marina area that Gotham definitely has. When it comes to that final confrontation, I mostly remembered it for like the big wooden speedboats and then it getting caught up in the motors, which just for some reason made me think of Indiana Jones Lost Crusade.
Yes, I was thinking the same.
I love that movie as well.
Oh, well, the original, well, the only...
No, there's only
Indiana Jones movies, yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, that's it. Again, tiniest silly niggles. Another magnificent episode, I thought.
Great character portrait of four titans of pointy-eared Gotham crime-fighting fame. Well, actually, no, three pointy-eared and one big-winged. Good, solid performance and portrait of Gotham's finest characters, definitely.
Well said. Speaking of solid performances, let's end the show as we always do by telling our viewers and listeners where they can hear more of your solid performances and read more of your work.
My work is scattered across the Gotham skyline. For more Batman-flavoured things, look to Dark Knight News, where I review multiple titles a month. Both Catwoman and Batman Joker Deadly Duo are in excellent spots right now. But for my one true love, PC and tabletop gaming, look no further than Our Pride and Joy, fantasticuniverses.com, where it's been a while, but I talk my utmost about PC, console, tabletop, and everything in between on that dear platform. read my writing on Storytellers Forge, where I try to level up your TTRPG experience. Follow me on Twitter at isittinkerer, where it's mostly just me posting screenshots of my epic wins on various collectible online card games. Follow my sound work on the Fantastic Universes podcast called Fantastic Plays, where I talk about everything going on in the world of gaming. And do keep an ear out coming soon for Misguided League, An Adventure in the First Gate, a promotional work for my new book for Dungeons & Dragons.
Yes.
Follow me on twitch.tv/isittinkerer, because one day I'll stream again. One day, but probably not this day. Where can we, the dear listeners and viewers, find your things, friend?
Well, every week on this show with yourself, the other Nightwing, and most weeks on the main DC Comics News podcast, all of which can be found on Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Play, and wherever you get your podcasts. DC Comics News, Dark Knight News, and Fantastic Universes, the three sister sites, can be found all over social media, on Twitter at DC Comics News, at DK News.com, and at Fan Universes. You can catch us on Facebook, Tumblr, and the YouTubes as well. So you can see our gorgeous bat-like visages, as well as hear our gorgeous bat-like voices. As for me, just search Steve J. Ray or Fantastic Universes in Google or your search engine of choice, or talk to me on Twitter at lstevo, which you'll see above this magnificent melon here at el_steevo. But until you do, things you need to learn, things you need to feel, things you need to do.
I am the night.
We are the night.
And this has been the I Am The Night podcast. Thank you for listening, and until next time,
read
more
comics
and watch
more
Batman.